The content is the protected copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us for today's discussion on this podcast about how you could stay ahead of the H-1B cap and how to make plans for 2026 and beyond. Joining me for today's podcast discussion are two of my esteemed colleagues at the Murthy Law Firm. We have Adam Rosen, who's the managing attorney, and Anna Stepanova, the assistant managing attorney. Each of them has been with the firm, I don't even know. I think between the three of us, it's probably close to almost, definitely more than half a century, maybe closer to three quarters of a century, but we're not dating ourselves, right? We are here to share information, knowledge, to empower, to educate you, and to help you to stay ahead of the curve. So what are the issues we're planning to discuss today? We're going to cover three main areas. One is the H-1B, $100,000 fee, because that's the big elephant in the room. Everyone kind of has a pretty good idea of what it is, but doesn't understand why we're getting RFEs and what's going on with the whole $100,000 fee. Next, we're going to talk about the cap, the H-1B lottery, what's going on, you know, how, what the planning looks like, including maybe backup options like L1s, H-4 EADs, OPT, and the long-term strategy. And then we'll get into certain issues. And some of you may have heard that very, very recently, the USCIS announced the dates for the H-1B registration under the new system starting from March 2026. So the dates are supposed to be March 4th through March 19th of 2026. And so let's get down to the issues at hand, right? And I'm sorry if I didn't introduce myself. I am Sheila Murthy, President and CEO of the Murthy Law Firm, and we are truly honored to have you here. So Adam, if I can get started with you first.
Sure.
Could you please talk a little bit about the H-1B $100,000 fees? What should an employer consider?
Sure. So at a high level, the $100,000 fee comes from a presidential proclamation issued in September 2025. And it ties this substantial payment to certain kinds of H-1B petitions, primarily where the case is filed for or approved for consular processing. So where there's no change of status and there's no extension of status requested. It doesn't apply in those situations. So if somebody is filing a change of status in H-1B, there's no fee that's required. If you're filing an extension of status, again, this fee of $100,000 is not required. The risk arises when consular processing is required, either because the worker is abroad or because the petition can only be approved that way. And then the fee has to be paid. Now, where employers are struggling is that U.S. implementation has been inconsistent and slow. We've seen RFEs requesting the fee even where the agency guidance suggests it shouldn't apply, including things like an extension case and cases involving beneficiaries who already have a valid H-1B visa stamp in their passport. And even when RFEs have been responded to, employers are waiting even beyond the 15 days when they're using premium processing. From a litigation standpoint, there are serious legal challenges still pending. Right now in three courts in Washington, D.C., there are going to be arguments of an appeal that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce filed. In California, they're going to have a hearing later in mid-February, and the case in Massachusetts is just starting out. But here's the critical point for employers. They know that this federal district court in D.C. already upheld the fee. And so while that decision is on appeal, it's still in effect. And so that single ruling matters because it gives the government a credible legal win. And so it makes it much less likely that the fee will simply disappear in the near term on its own. So for planning purposes, employers should assume that the fee is real, it's enforceable, and that USCIS is going to continue asking for it even while this litigation moves forward.
That's pretty overwhelming, and I know that many, many companies, employers, especially tech companies that tend to do thousands of these cases, were really hoping that some of these legal challenges would be squished immediately, but that is not and has not happened yet, as you just pointed out, Adam. So
right.
To strategically pivot, from here, right? If the employer should assume that the fee is here for now, then I guess, Anna, the next question becomes, how should employers and employees be trying to plan? What should they be trying to do here?
Absolutely, Sheila. So because of the fee and because of some other changes, the major shift that we're seeing right now is that employers can no longer rely on the H-1B alone and treat it as the default starting point. So before even considering registration, they should take a look at some other options to get their employees to start employment in maybe some other status such as L1 and see if their prospective employees may be eligible for the L1 category. That means they should confirm a qualifying corporate relationship with an affiliate abroad, which is necessary. That means that they must ensure that the employee has worked abroad for at least one continuous year within the past 3 years, and also evaluate whether the role meets the criteria for the category managerial, executive, or specialized knowledge standards. So as you can see, this requires some planning, and if you don't have the right infrastructure, you probably are not able to consider this option for this year. But, you know, going forward, L1 is a really viable option, and it can help you completely bypass the H-1B lottery and also critically avoid the $100,000 fee that Adam talked about. So it also offers some other flexibility. An employee in L1 status can try for the H-1B for multiple years. And it's not like if you miss this year, then next year you may no longer have this option. And this particular sequence of events using L1 at first and then H-1B later is central to both cost control and risk management. That said, I want to underscore again that from a long-term planning perspective, L1 is truly an excellent entry strategy, but it wouldn't be a universal solution. So L1B status is capped at 5 years for L1B and L1A at 7 years. For employees from heavily backlogged countries such as China and India, those time limits are often insufficient to reach, to reach the point when they are able to apply for a green card based on employer sponsorship. And H-1B status, by contrast, allows extensions beyond 6 years. So if you start somebody on L1 and then continue employing them on H-1B until their priority date becomes current, then that will allow employers to have this kind of long-term strategy actually working in their favor.
Yes, so I think the idea is consider and keep all options open. We talked about L1, we'll come to H4 later. Everything has pros, cons, and all of that. But let's get back to the core of the issue, which is the H-1B lottery itself. You know, Adam, what has changed? What hasn't changed? And what do employers tend to kind of get a little thrown off guard at times?
So the fundamentals are still the same. It's a 65,000 regular cap, master's cap that has 20,000 numbers, and an electronic registration that, just earlier today, we learned, we're recording today on January 30th, USCIS announced that the registration is going to start on March 4th, 2026. And so that is typical that it starts in March. It's a little bit earlier than previous years, but still it's in March. What also hasn't changed is that there'll be oversubscription. The demand still far exceeds supply, so selection is never guaranteed. One of the most common mistakes that employers do make is that assuming there'll be multiple selection rounds, and while that sometimes has happened and can happen again, it's not guaranteed and really shouldn't be part of your strategy. That the registration period, you register during there, and then once the registration period is closed, then they run their selection. From a compliance standpoint, registration mechanics matter more than many employers realize. The employer must have a MyUSCIS organizational account. Even when using an attorney, and the information entered at the registration needs to be consistent and defensible, the attorney will need to link the account that they're using with the organization's account. So when your attorney gives you instructions about setting it up, responding, those things are important in order for the attorney to be able to submit it on your behalf. Some of the important details that are necessary are passport data, job details like salary, duties, location, and the wage information. USCIS is very focused on whether the registration reflects a real bona fide job opportunity that will actually be filled by this person if the registration is selected.
Got it. Okay. So I think the next thing that we know that is changing for this year, which is fiscal year 2027, starting with the registration in March 2026 for the H-1 petition to become effective from October 1 of 2026, is this new, entirely new thing called the weighted lottery system. So, Anna, how should the employer be planning for this new system?
So under this new weighted system, there are a certain number of certain changes that employers should be aware of. The selection odds would be linked and will be linked to the wage level, which will be assigned at registration. And the wage level, again, as many of employers know, will be determined under the Occupational Employment and Wage Statistics through the Office of Foreign Labor Certification. The higher wage levels will receive additional lottery entries. So wage level one will get one entry. Level two gets two. Level three gets three entries. And level four will get four entries. But importantly, this still remains a lottery. So it's not some kind of a ranking. And it doesn't exclude any entries. It just adds some entries to a specific wage level. The practical effect is that the front-end accuracy matters more than ever. The specialty occupation code, the SOC code, the work location, the wage level that will be chosen at registration must reflect the position exactly as it will exist at the time that the petition is filed. And if USCIS later identifies some issues with discrepancies suggesting that the wage level was artificially elevated to improve selection chances, such as post-selection changes in job duties or work site that would justify a low wage level, employees can face very, very serious compliance issues. And another critical point I'd like to mention is that the process is really beneficiary-centric. What does it mean? It means that submitting multiple registrations for the same person, the same employee, doesn't actually increase selection odds and may actually backfire if USCIS can apply the lowest wage level across all registrations for the same beneficiary. So employees need to be aware of all of these changes. And what I'd like to underscore again, it has to be accurate when you submit your registration. All of the components that go into the job offer should be truly as, you know, the job offer requires.
Very good point. Since, you know, the USCIS could end up, if a person has three or four different employers filing, they would actually use the lowest wage level, even if the particular job the person really wants and is hoping for is of a higher wage level. So lots and lots for employers and employees to make sure we're, you know, dotting our I's, crossing our T's, and really thinking through issues, as Adam and Anna have just explained. One of the other issues that questions that we keep getting asked here at the Murthy Law Firm is, you know, I'm my employee already. I have a very good employee working for me. maybe on H4 EAD or F1 day 1 CPT or F1 OPT, you know, can I just continue with them and not worry about this whole H1 issue at all? And I guess the answer is, how stable is it? Is it reliable? And the prime example, of course, that you all are aware of or should be, is that the H4 EADs, which are no longer automatic extensions, meaning that even if the H4 EAD applicant now files a renewal prior to the expiration date, that could still result in a gap where the employer has to stop the employee from working, the employee must stop working. And obviously this could create financial disruption, operational disruption, and other kinds of risks, both from the employer and the employee point of view. And of course, we also have a little bit of a historical context in this case. And the historical context is prior administrations have tried to eliminate the H4 EAD altogether, right? It hasn't yet happened, but it really demonstrates how vulnerable this category can be to policy shifts, because it is largely based on regulations and not on the statute itself. So to summarize, you know, probably wise to try to do the H1B registration for the H4 EAD or the F1 OPT or the day one CPT employee for the H1B lottery to try to hopefully increase the chances of continuity, predictability, and protect key contributors for the employer and for the organization. So if I can just quickly wrap up, you know, whether you're the employer or the employee, it's important to strategize, to understand the parameters we're working with, and to really do integrated planning. For the employer, you want to ensure that you audit your workforce. You run parallel H1 and L1 analysis if you're eligible. Remember, we have the weighted lottery system starting from the calendar year 2026 or the fiscal year 2027 H1B. And the $100,000 fee is clearly something that's there. And if it's not done properly, if it ends up being a consular processing approval, you could end up triggering the $100,000 fee. So hopefully we've given you a good sense of how to plan, how to strategize, and how to be better prepared as employers and employees so that you can continue to grow and succeed. On behalf of Adam Rosen, Anna Stepanova, myself, Sheila Muthi, and our entire law firm team, we thank you for joining us today, and we very much look forward to continuing to educate you and empower you as you deal with so many constantly evolving issues. Have a wonderful day and take care.
Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.